This is a lecture given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website, stdave.org.
Are familiar with El Buen Samaritano. Okay, so like, you know El Buen Samaritano. How many of you have been to the campus at El Buen Samaritano? Excellent. El Buen Samaritano is it's in a location, right, in South Austin, William Cannon and Woodview. It's a place. It's a magical, beautiful village of love and hope where people come together to co-create a beautiful community. It is also a place everywhere. We carry it with us wherever we go. And that's what makes, I believe, El Buen such a powerful, powerful place. So before I go into the PowerPoints, and it, believe me, it's a good thing I have a PowerPoint because I will go all over the place, and Georgia knows that. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Georgia. Some of you have met Georgia. Georgia works with me very closely to do external stakeholder relations and fundraising and collaborative efforts with many of the Episcopalian churches and schools. And so to Georgia, I owe a debt of gratitude for all her work. And thank you, Gustavo, and the board for the support that I am provided to do this, do this mission work. I always like to start with why. I want to read to you my why this work is important to me. Meet Camila. He represents the past and future of Latinos. The house she hosts is a symbol of the contributions of Latinos to this country. We build homes, universities, communities. We are the builders of the future. We are the teachers, the nurses, the doctors, ingenieros, constructores, economistas, matemáticos. Camila, she is our reminder of the work ahead of us. She is our hope. She is our vision. He is our builder. We hold ourselves accountable to her and ask you to join us. Together, we will work, lead, and walk 1,000 miles to our last breath for her well-being. This nation depends on her power and her well-being. She is the future of our nation. She is the future of this community. This is a picture taken during the height of the pandemic when we had to pivot all of our services to online. So we had view services. And this was one of the classes where they were building, creating. It was an engineering class. We built that home. And it was such a powerful picture personally for me. It captured my heart, it captured my vision, and it captured why I do what I do. Here's the magical place I was talking about, right? Our vision is to see a community where everyone is welcome, enjoys a sense of belonging, and has full opportunity to reach their highest potential. A community where we all thrive. And we do this by providing access to health services, education, and essential needs. I probably could spend 1 hour on each of the services that we provide, giving you all kinds of statistics and all kinds of background and curriculum. So I'm going to try to do my best to give you a taste of what all those services are and get a sense of everything that we do. By the way, are there any I saw some folks that have gone to volunteer. And forgive me if I'm not recognizing you right now, but are there any here that have done any kind of volunteer with anyone? Excellent. Thank you. Thank you. One of the things that is very important for us is the framework that we use to serve community. But how do we see community? What lens do we use to see community? Do we see the people we serve as poor and helpless and vulnerable? Or do we see them as powerful, strong, and the future, right? Which lens do we use? Because that is what determines how we treat them. That is what determines our efforts. And I am very fortunate to lead an organization that all the way from the board to the very root of the organization uses a lens of social justice, right? A lens where the people that we serve are the people that are co-creating with us the well-being of this community, where their power, their strength, their contributions are equally important to what we contribute to that partnership. So I'd like to share the framework. And this is the framework that the board also came together and worked on as we were doing strategic planning. We will advance equity in policies that recognize dignity for all. We will lead systems level transformation through a social justice framework that dismantles inequities. And number three, our collaborative, inclusive leadership will promote equity, community inclusion, and accountability to transform systems and policies that disproportionately impede Latinos' access to education, health, and economic opportunities. So they're like, that's broad, that's big. Sometimes when I talk to people about the work that we are at, that we're about, I start with, we do pantry services, we do financial and rental assistance, we do education, that kind of makes a closer connection with people, right? But we also do work that attempts to change the structures that have created the need that we see many families experience. And so that challenges us to do all of our work through partnering. And when it's amazing, and it's even more amazing when it comes together with community partners. We have a cohort of about 30 community partners with whom we, on a regular basis, collaborate to create access to food, access to financial and rental assistance, technology, education. Who remembers baby formula shortage, right? Yeah. Mobilizing whatever we could to make sure that we secure baby formula, and then collaborating with partners to make sure that was distributed. This is a summary. Can you all, I don't know. Oh my God, I sound louder here. Or maybe, forgive me. This is a comprehensive services framework, and bear with me as I get a little bit lectury, right? So there's different areas that we strategically work on a regular basis so that we have broad and deep reach into community. We make our footprint, our services span over five counties, Travis County and the four surrounding counties. So it's a very broad reach that El Buen has. We also, the way that our services, the access to our services are, like I said earlier, through partnerships. We have a call center We have learned to do tele-education, right? And tele-client-based counseling, especially in the area of reproductive health. We provide online access for those that can access online, have technology. We do drive-through, walk-ups, mobile pantries, and home delivery. So we have a diversity of methods that we use to serve individuals and families. And as I said earlier, definitely through partnerships. Very important for us to have a comprehensive approach, right? So Georgia comes to the pantry, we get to become very close with Georgia to learn about what are other needs that Georgia and or her family have, so that we may be able to connect them. And so for us, it's not just Georgia coming to the pantry and accessing food. It is accessing a world that we hope gives her an opportunity to build wealth, health, and well-being for her family. This is just again a summary of the services and numbers, what we have done over the last 3 years. I keep going, but it's like when the pandemic happened, but the like we're still experiencing that, right? Like, when does it end? It doesn't end. But bear with me. So these numbers are from March 2020 to the present. In the area of food access, almost 42 individuals we have reached with access to food. In the area of health and coordinated care, a little bit over 7,000 individuals. And this includes vaccines. And I'll come back to the vaccine story in a little bit. Financial and rental assistance. As of this month, we have managed a little bit over $8 million in direct cash assistance and rental assistance, eviction prevention services for people that are experiencing tremendous challenging staying housed. I'll come back to that one. And then, of course, education and workforce. We have a continuum of education services all the way from first grade to adults. We hold out-of-school time services that provide academic support after school, and then also summer camps, two summer camp sessions for youth from first grade through eighth grade. And now we're integrating a transition to high school program as part of our summer camp and our ongoing services. Just because I was traumatized, let me work with it. who remembers March 2020, March 17, March, I don't even remember the exact date, right? And that day, we had to immediately, from one day to the next, let go of all the volunteers. And when I came to El Buen in 2019, I did a fuzzy math thing about like how many volunteers are here helping us move the mission. And about 80% of the people moving the mission were volunteers. Like it was a huge cohort of volunteers. So you can imagine when we had to close down and had to let go of the very heart of the organization that was helping us move. And so we were left with about 15 employees, because some couldn't come on site. And the employees that were there, I asked them, have you ever done an emergency response operations? And they said, what is that? And then I said, well, have you heard of it? No. Like I went through, have you read about it? Have you heard about it? Have you done it? Nobody knew anything about emergency response operations. And because I have worked in public health for many years, I ate, drank, and slept emergency response and preparedness operations, right? And so what I said, like bossy me, if you can imagine, I'm not that bossy, right, Georgia? I thought, oh my God, how am I going to do this? Right. So I said, okay, then everybody, you need, you're going to, I need your commitment to follow me. Will you please follow me? And that was a tall order because remember, I had just gotten to El Buen. I got to El Buen in July 2019 and then, of course, March 2020. And the team, it was just getting to know me. They didn't know what to think about me just yet. And then I asked them, please follow me. And so the 15 individuals that said yes, work with me. And I get emotional because it was a very small team given the magnitude that we had. I mean, the situation that we had coming. And these 15 individuals worked tirelessly with me to move El Buen into a position of serving the need of the community. And I was very blessed that the board supported that, because at that time it was taking big risks, right? The city of Austin said, can you distribute $500,000 in cash to people that don't qualify for the federal stimulus checks? And like, what am I going to say? Because the city knows there's certain organizations, right, that serve the immigrant community, the community that did not qualify for the federal stimulus check. So I said, sure. And that ignited the power of the people that were working with me. That sounds beautiful, but let me tell you, in one day, we got like 7,000 calls, right? So that we couldn't respond to, right? Imagine 7,000 calls. And we still had like a 19th century phone system. and then people were coming over to El Buen with unimaginable stories and experiences that we couldn't even invite them inside, right? So by the way, Luis, who is our data and technology person, said, you know what, we need to upgrade this phone system. We need to set up a call center. And like from day, you know, it took us a few days, but we established a call center that allowed us to manage the magnitude of need. And then also work with us to have connections with language lines. So it was not just Latinos, right? Spanish speakers. It was everybody that was needing assistance. So we distributed the $500,000, and then the city goes, oh, that's great. Can you do a million? And I said, sure. And then they go, in a month, of course. And you know what? We did that. And we did. I am a true believer that God and the angels guided our paths, that we were being helped and in a way that is miraculous to be able to do that. So from those $500,000 to now, distributing, managing $8 million in support of financial and rental assistance to families has been a combination, I believe, of yes, staff and board support and funders, as well as the being held by angels, being held and supported by people like you, and our donors and our volunteers. So for that, I am so eternally grateful. We are set, and that, believe me, this kind of makes people uncomfortable sometimes. We are set to manage close to $12 million this next coming year in rental assistance. And it's a lot of pass-through money, right, that comes that is managed by El Buen. But it's also an opportunity for El Buen to build this infrastructure to serve in a more comprehensive way. So that's my final, you tell me when I'm about to run out of time, right? Like, I can tell you stories. Let me share with you the story about the vaccines. How many of you had the opportunity back then, if you remember, to go on the portal to register to get an appointment to get a vaccine? How many of you remember that? And was it like really easy? Right? No. Well, can you imagine it? I gave up. I really did. Like, I'm going to call my friends at Austin Public Health and see if they can get me in. I mean, I was like, and so what was happening is that many of the elderly, you know, white, Black, Hispanic, people with disabilities, people with pre-existing conditions, that did not have access to technology. And even if they did, it was a system that was not made for them. So they were being left behind. People were coming in from everywhere in Texas, in the nation, to get a vaccine in Austin. Meanwhile, our elderly, our people with disabilities, people without access to technology were not having access. So one of the things that we did was to partner with Austin Public Health. They called up and said, again, you know, this habit of, can you do this? And they said, can you help us do warm handoffs, recruit old elderly people or people with disabilities and pre-existing conditions? And we said, yes. What that meant was that we did deep outreach with our partners to find people, to find older adults, to find folks that we knew needed the services. And we would say, we can get you an appointment for a vaccine. Do you give us permission to give your name and phone number to the government? Right? And they did. And so through that process, it was almost like an underground process, right? Like trying to get access to a group of individuals that was not having access. We reached, I want to say, almost 1,500 individuals. And then the rest of history, the city, the mayor found out about us, and we were doing a back to school event. And they said, hey, can we bring some people that vaccine, you know, to vaccinate others? And of course, I hardly ever say no. So come on over. The staff reads out every time I say, come on over. So that's how we started our vaccine clinics. And to this day, we have vaccinated well over 7,000 individuals. And have started to, we continue to do COVID vaccines, but we've added a whole variety of vaccines in partnership with Austin Public Health for both adult and young people. So right now we're having clinic twice a week. And so it's a great partnership. We also go with Austin Public Health to areas where we know unhoused people are, you know, congregating, and provide vaccines that way too. So it's that's going to continue. Our next step in that process, especially as we get to vaccinate young, you know, youth and their families is what else, how else can we connect them to health services or other other services that they might need? Education and workforce for us, and personally for me, education was a way out of poverty. I am a first generation immigrant, came to the United States at a time that was in many ways easier to come, right? We were one of the lucky ones 100 years ago that my father worked in the US and my mom never wanted to come to the United States. Like, I'm never moving over there, move me to the border. So we lived in the border for a long time until there was the big flood where we lived. We lost everything and my mother said, we're leaving. So I helped her pack up whatever we could pack up and we crossed the border to El Paso. And that's where I grew up. And where we were served by many people like El Buen, right? We were served by many people that we never saw that were supporting those individuals in many ways like you, that connected us to services, to food, to education. And so for me personally, education is critical if we're going to stand a chance of spinning out of a cycle of poverty, which, by the way, research tells us it's almost impossible. And that becomes overwhelming. That is an overwhelming reality. I believe it's possible. And the people that work at El Buen and our board believes it's possible. And we are adding rigor to our education components all the way from, we call it from cradle to contributor, where we give many youth that don't have access to tutoring. I don't know about you, but I had to pay a lot of money for my son to go to tutoring, right? Where we provide access to summer camps, especially for older middle schoolers. The summer camps for middle schoolers on a good day are about $800 a week, right? Half day. This last 3 years, when we opened up the camp to full time and included the older kids, we had a flood of families reaching out. We had to put some kids on a wait list, but over a little bit over 50% of the youth that we serve were in middle school, right? It's such a critical time for young people, that middle school to high school transition. Forgive me for keep continuing to cite studies, but when we look at high school dropout rates and we study what contributed to it, it was that transition in middle school that was not very helpful, but where we start to lose youth to high school. So I'm really excited about what we're doing with that component of our services, and then also doing it in collaboration with other organizations, like Avance, Todos Juntos, Con Mi Madre, Latinitas, Any Baby Can, just the whole spectrum of organizations that are working to address the educational and developmental needs of Latino youth. Questions? All right. This just gives you a breakdown of the demographics. Before the pandemic, We were serving about 92-94% Latinos when the pandemic got here. That the number of people that we were serving from other race and ethnicities increased. One of the things that is, I guess for me, important, I always keep it up in front of me, is that last bullet there, the household monthly income of the families that we serve is not below 200, it's below 50% of the federal poverty level, right? Like if we start to see people closer to 200, that's like, that's good. I mean, that's wealthy. But the people that we serve are way below that. Earlier, I talked about doing comprehensive services. Wherever people enter El Buen, whether it's food pantry education, financial rental assistance, workforce, we ask, what else? What's happening in your life? What else do you need? We call it social determinants of health assessment, to be fancy. And these are the top needs that we hear from the families that we're serving. And this information is what helps us to make decisions about, you know, what kind of funding we're going to go for, or how we're going to use the funds that are donated to El Buen. Food, as you can imagine. In food right now, the lines at El Buen, Samaritano, are just as long as they were at the height of the pandemic. I'm not proud to say that. For a while there, we started to see a low, you know, the lines going down, but on any given day, we will serve. So we're open Tuesdays and Thursdays, between 200 to 300 families. And 20% of those families are new families. You know, our funders want to see new families, right? But the other thing is that the people that continue to come over and over, right? The chronicity of this, it tells a story. If nobody wants to be going to a pantry every week to access food, if they had a choice. We also partner with other organizations to take, I used to call it our putt-putt van, but now I'm like, we got a fancy van now. That was, you know, we received funding to purchase that refrigerated van that allows us to take food into the Northeast, the Eastern Crescent. And we partnered with the School of Nursing and with the Community College, Eastview, the different organizations that allow us space to distribute, provide food. This right here is, remember earlier I was talking about the footprint, this for El Buen. These are the zip codes where people that are participating in our services live. So for me, this tells two several stories. How far people are willing to travel to access services, and sometimes not even willing, I mean, have to travel to access services, but also a story of partnering and partnerships. Strong partnerships that allow us to, if we cannot, because El Buen cannot do it all by himself, you know, we can't do it all by ourselves. How strong our partners are is how strong and deep we can get into these different communities. I love this picture. This is like my other Camila picture. Like, imagine this kid. To me, when I see this kid, like, this kid is running into the future, and the future is bright for this kid. And el buen gives him a sense that is bright and hopeful and powerful. I love it. I love it. Earlier, I talked about education. It's a critical component of our way forward. Education, comprehensive wraparound educational services for young people. Right now, we are almost about to close out our back to school en el juego campaign. En el juego, it means in the game, right? Like this guy. I mean, can you see him? Like, do you feel like he's really in the game? He's just really in the game, in the game. And our campaign in el juego, in the game. Oh, I hope people can you all still hear me? Sorry. It's about raising funds and resources to reinforce our educational services. And I want to share with you, some of you might have seen this video, but just in case you haven't, I want to share with you a video of En el Juego.
Raised by a community of joy and inclusion, where everyone feels welcome, enjoys a sense of belonging, and has the full opportunity to reach their highest potential. The community that is inherited in Guyana, in the or in the game, to be the next generation of Canadian children. Join us in the book a path where every youth can play, reading, learn, and create a safe and supportive learning environment. Whoever reminds us of our youth, the joy of playing games and facing our challenges. It reminds us that with unconditional support, no dream is too big and no dreamer too small. Every day out of one, this gets to experience the power of being and of women, bringing out the magic and power of our dreams and their ability to persevere and pursuit of those dreams. With an emphasis on STEM and the arts, leadership development and life skills, a West Youth Academic Center of Excellence has a 20-year history of coaching Latino youth and elementary student high school over the past 3 years in the game. Join us in raising the next generation of youth who will become smart, innovators, critical thinkers, and making goals. Together, we can surround new support we love, joy, and educational experiences that will create powerful generations to come.
Oh, and then you have to see, this is now my favorite picture, right there. I was very excited. Let's see. I think that's my last slide. Okay. Bear with me. There we go. Do I... Here we go. This is just a very high level list of the funding sources that we use to provide services. Grants and contracts, individual donors, the Episcopal churches and schools, foundations and corporate and business giving. And I think we can make available links to our donate or volunteer page, but this gives you an idea of how you can contribute your time, your talent, your treasure. We are always looking for volunteers. We're looking for individuals that come and work with us anywhere in the food pantry, with youth services, with health access. Hands for Hope is coming. So you'll probably be hearing some more about Hands for Hope. And we might also be looking for volunteers for our 35th anniversary, which let me not forget, right? So What I just shared with you was just the last 4 years, right? Which is a very short period of time. And Gwen has been around for 35 years. And this is our 35th anniversary. And in many ways, what Edwin has been able to accomplish over the last 4 years is because of the 31 or so years of rootedness in the community, trust and respect by the community. And so I cannot overlook, we cannot overlook how important those 31 years were to get Edwin to a place where it was able to be one of the top organizations responding in this time of crisis. I'm gonna just pause right here. How much time do we have?
About 5 minutes for the questions.
Excellent. Yes, please.
I was wondering if El Boyne takes a position on the border crisis situation and has thoughts about that.
Definitely. Thank you. Thank you for that. Was it on? I think that it is on. Okay. So do we take a position about the border crisis and what we're doing about it, right? We get to see firsthand the people that are coming to this nation at El Buen. Sometimes I'll tell you a story about, it was three young women. And to me now, everybody seems really young. Really young. They had four children, all under 3 years. And they were carrying two in their back. They walked about 5 miles. They had just gotten to this country. They came to Austin, walked about 5 miles because somebody told them that at El Buen they could get some food. And we see that on a regular basis. The crisis at the border is the crisis in our community, right? And so we respond to it every day. We are measured by the humanity that we show people. And El Buen stance, El Buen's position on that is seen every day by serving those that are coming. And reminding our community that many of us had a similar journey. Had a similar journey.
But you don't get into the politics of it or about the solution or.
Right. We work with a coalition of individuals, and you can imagine you have a through C perspectives on how we must manage the realities of the border. By the way, this is not the first time that hundreds and thousands of individuals come to the United States with a dream of a better life, right? This is not the first time. It is the story of the United States. And so our positions is to find the place where we all have some level of agreement to serve the community. And the politics question is very interesting. Right? I often sit in rooms where I absolutely disagree with what is being said. Watch the news. And yet, I can't let that stop us from serving community. But it is an interesting situation to manage. Thank you for that question. Anything else? Any other questions? Yes.
How do people get on the border to Wayne?
Oh, how do people get from the border to Wayne? All kinds of ways. Keep in mind that many of the people that we serve have walked hundreds of miles. Hundreds of miles to get here, have survived the desert, have survived drones, have survived guns, have survived all kinds of situations to get just to the border. So for them to get from the border to here, that's probably the easy part. Right? That really is. And so they sometimes they'll have families already here that can give them, give them access. Sometimes there are people that got here in a closed trailer without food and water. I mean, there's all kinds of ways that people get here to Austin. The stories that we hear are oftentimes stories where they already have a family member here that is helping them to find a way. Yeah. Thank you for that. ¿Qué más? What else? What's running? I'm curious, what's running through your mind? Yes.
How do you get involved? What's the first step if we want to help?
Definitely. Multiple ways. Call us. Call us. Our website. You can access us by calling us. Make sure you have our contact. You have Georgia's contacts. We need volunteers. We need tutors. We need, helping us to fundraise. All kinds of ways people can get involved. And by the way, I am so thankful to this community for their contributions to Edwin. Anything else, Georgia, about getting involved?
Our biggest goal is always to kind of identify what is your mission and what moves you in the food access, in the education, and then we can together that experience to define the best fit in all of it. Definitely we can connect. I know a lot of us have information, and so we can talk to us. And you can definitely connect with me and
most volunteers would be working at the region.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And if you have a garden as well, if our meeting is happening, the team that we saw like weekly on Saturdays, so if that's more of a family environment, if you want to make children, girls, children, those are definitely experiences that we have. Mm-hmm. But from our virtual, so now that our education programs are virtual, you can be a tutor or a mentor for one of our students virtually as well. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts? All right. Well, I am so thankful that you gave me this opportunity to come share with you what we're doing at Edwin, and look forward to our paths crossing again. By the way, this is the first time I go to an Episcopalian mass. I can't even say I'm a Catholic. I'm a recovering Catholic. I'm a recovering Catholic, and I kind of like the mass today, so I don't know. It feels like, one of the things that I liked about going to church before becoming a recovering Catholic was the community, right? The sense of community. And I love the sense of community, and it was just a very special experience that I had today. Thanks for inviting me.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.